This podcast is brought to you by Sage Hill, a social impact organization. Our mission is to help people be who they're made to be so that they can do what they're made to do. Find more resources to live fully, love deeply, and lead well at sagehillresources.com.
Hey, this is Stephen James. Thanks for listening to the Live Fully podcast. Here at Sage Hill, one of the passions that we have and one of the commitments we have is to help women and men heal from sexual trauma. Sadly, it's very common. And some statistics show it's more common than not common that women experience levels of shame and disconnection and isolation and fear and anxiety because of how they have been mistreated sexually by people of power, both men and women who take advantage of people. A big core of the work we have done here historically and continue to do is help women and men heal from and through those experiences. Kristen and Ingrid lead a workshop here at Sage Hill called Hashtag Me Too Workshop, which is designed to help women grow and heal from sexual trauma. And I wanted them to come on the podcast so we could talk about it and begin to like shed light on problems and begin to show a path for solutions and healing and growth for people who that's sadly part of their story. So here's a short conversation we've had. If you find it helpful, I'm glad. Please share it with somebody that you might feel benefits from it. And if there's anything we can do to help, please reach out. Let us know. Hey, Ingrid. Hey, Kristen.
Hi. Hey.
I'm so glad y'all were open to doing the podcast for Sage Hill. Though we're talking about something kind of heavy today. We're not talking about like some of the light things we sometimes talk about or the silly things. And so I'm a little nervous about doing this because I like laughing on these things and telling jokes, and there's nothing really funny about what we're talking about today. So thank y'all for coming on. The reason I wanted to have you on is because I admire the work you're doing here at Sage Hill, specifically in your work around helping women heal from sexual trauma. And we all know, the three of us know, that that's not an uncommon thing. And sadly, it's more common than any of us would want to know. And with that, y'all have created some moments, both in your individual work and in workshop work that you do, to help women begin to navigate healing and growth and transformation and not be so defined by their trauma and their heartache. So I want us to just kind of like just talk about that today and talk about the effects of historic sexual trauma and recent sexual trauma for women, and like what we can do about it to recover from it. And so that's my agenda, but I think I would start to ask, like, kick it off, like the question would be is, what makes you drawn to that?
I can start. This is
Thanks, Ingrid.
I would say it is a very odd thing to be drawn to, when you tell new people you meet that you're a therapist, there's always like, oh, they want you to be a physical therapist or something, because that's uncomfortable. They're like, ugh. And then when I talk more about the work I do with, sexual trauma, then it's like, oh boy. So that's been something I've contemplated. And I think that really our relationship with our bodies, our identity and intimacy are violated so deeply through sexual trauma. And so it's really the hope of restoration in those things that is so powerful and has drawn me to this work, because I see how deeply it harms people and impacts people for generations. And then also, generations, not just within one person's lifetime. So I guess I see where there's a lot of pain, there's a lot of hope and healing.
Oh, thank you, Ingrid. What about you, Kristen? What draws you to this work?
Yeah. I was actually talking to a friend today about why I couldn't do something tonight. And I said, well, I'm doing a podcast. She was like, oh, wow. Like, she's an artist friend, like super cool. And I was like, well, I'm actually talking about sexual trauma. And she was like, oh, she's like, wow. Yeah. I kind of forget, like, she knows what I do, but it's almost, she kind of forgets because she kind of pushes it away, or we can do that sometimes with the work that we do. And so I think for me, it's just, I think so much begins and ends with like what Inger was saying, with our body and with just our own experiences of shame. And I think that, like, as we're growing up, it's like things that are said to us or things we experience, those do have these ripple effects later on in life. And I think that if we don't go back and really address those core memories or experiences, a lot of times through sexual trauma and shame, then you are kind of creating a separate identity sometimes. You don't even know who the real person is because they've gotten so lost along the way, because they're making a lot of decisions based upon their reaction to things instead of maybe how they really feel because they don't want to get hurt again.
So let's stop for a second, because y'all both have said a ton. I want to like start going into that. One, you both said that the work you do is odd because like most people don't want to talk about it or address it or don't want to, don't want to know it's there. You know, right. You said, when people ask what you do and you start talking about what you do, they wish you were a physical therapist, you know, because it's so much more comfortable. Right. And Kristen, your friend who, like was hoping your podcast was about fashion or something, but you know,
right. Yeah.
And so why do y'all think that something so common, and what you said, Ingrid, and you echoed, Kristen, that so touches the core of fracturing the human experience, right? Like, why do you think we don't want to talk about it generally, or know about it, or admit that it's part of the human story?
Oh, shame. I mean, 100%.
How so?
I mean, I think that there's so much shame for women and men about thinking that whatever happened to them was they played a part, and that they carry some of that responsibility. If they wouldn't have done XYZ or worn that or drank that or hung out with that person, then maybe that wouldn't have happened to them being part of their story.
Do y'all hear that a lot? Like, people say that a lot. Like, every, the idea that if every, I hadn't.
Yes. Yeah. Every client, and I mean it, like every client I've ever had who has had sexual trauma in their history has said, well, you know, if it was this situation, if it was in a back alley and there was a gun, then it would be legitimate. Like, it wouldn't be my fault, or it wouldn't be, you know, I could have maybe done this or I could have done that. Like, there's no one I've worked with is says, this bad thing happened to me and I know it's not my fault at the beginning of our work. Like, that just has never happened.
So one reason we don't want to talk about it is shame. We don't want to acknowledge it as shame. So you say that also here, a level of powerlessness to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like that the shame almost comes to a sense of like, I didn't have any power over, like I was powerless in this. Do you find that to be true?
I find that there is a perception of powerless. There's a perception of power and control in it. Like, there's this dichotomy of being victimized, but then not wanting to admit that. And so it's much more comfortable to have that self contempt and shame than to say someone hurt me. So I would add on shame and just the reality of the pain and the depth of the pain. People don't want to look at pain. You know, we want to move away from it.
Why do you think?
I mean,
why do I?
Go ahead. You,
I mean, we all look for an escape when it comes to pain. Like, that's why addiction exists in this world. And we all have our ways of avoiding it. And so something that is so deep in which we don't have power over, is really, really scary to know, like, I was hurt in a way and I had no control in it.
Right. And I think another reason why we don't talk about it too is because there's this dissociation and freezing that happens with the trauma part, where it's almost like a hamster wheel. Like, even though there's a freezing part, there's still like this ruminating of like, if I would have done something different, right? Where you can't get out of that cycle. So it's like, let me just dissociate and put it to the side and not think about that. Because that can be really exhausting, because it feels like there's no way out, just like the trauma felt like there was no way out, right? And so it's kind of like replaying itself.
It makes total sense. Actually, it makes sense to me. I'm going to say it back and tell me. So one of the ways we cope initially with like having harm done to us, especially around like the sexual categories of power and humiliation and shame, and is to adopt an idea that I could have done something to stop it, or I could have done, like, I have a part to play in this. And when that doesn't work, we tend to dissociate and push it aside. The pain, and you talk about the pain and the fear of having to look at it again and having to deal with it again. It's like, it's so scary and so painful that I just don't, like, I just want to not have to deal with that.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, I think it's so, what I know and what y'all know is, most people who are coming to this work to deal with it, that's not what they're coming. That's not what they initially, sometimes people are going, hey, this happened to me, and I know that was, that's a core issue and I need to address it, right? Mm-hmm. Often people come into therapy to deal with their sexual trauma, and that's not the first thing we hear about, right? Mm-hmm. We hear about these other symptoms, or other, not symptoms, these, some of them are symptoms, but others are just manifestations of coping. What are some of the things that y'all heard people come in to get help for? And as you do work over weeks or months, you find out, like, and they find out there's this other core story that's driving it. What are some of the symptoms or the initial, like, asking for help causes? You mentioned addiction, Ingrid. That's something. What else?
Definitely anxiety and OCD. I think that comes up a lot, just trying to control their relationships or their job or their kids, or, you know, feeling like this deep disappointment and shame, like I can't manage it all, you know, and hypervigilance. But yeah, that's definitely the tip of the iceberg, you know, right. And then finding out, yeah, like you said, like the other story underneath, you know, is kind of coming out, but it's coming out sideways almost.
What about you, Ingrid? Like, what do you hear?
I definitely have heard eating disorders, disordered eating, low sex drive, or lack of interest, and depression and panic attacks. I just had panic attacks. I don't know why. Like, I've definitely heard that.
Yeah. And to be clear, we're not talking about people with repressed memories. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not thinking about, like, we're talking about people who know this really bad event happened. At some level, they can name this event, but they're so disconnected from the event and their current life. Like, I like what you said, Kristen, that a lot of this stuff is coming out sideways. And they don't understand the significance of the impact of their sexual trauma and how it infects their whole life. Is that something that you say yes?
Yes.
Okay.
It's just very common to even, and for, I would say most clients who come into my office are working on family of origin or all the other things we mentioned, and might even, you know, sign up to do an intensive or a workshop or something like that and be really focused on, this is what I want to work on. And then it'll trickle down, or really, you know, will drill down, and it really comes down to their sexual trauma. Mm. Really unlikely correlations will show up.
Yeah. I think as a sexual trauma survivor and healer myself, like, having experienced that myself and healed through it a lot, I think the things that I did to disconnect myself from it, you know, that became my other man, the other things of my anxiety or my performance-based identity or my lack of attachment, like that kind of stuff. Like I was so focused on those things as a way to disconnect that it was so hard for me to begin to look at those narratives, you know, those stories, those moments, because I'd spent my whole life trying to run away from it. The problem I found is like the harder, like all the roads were kind of leading me back to the minute I started getting in touch with me, I had to get in touch with my shame. And then I could, and my fear and my hurt and my loneliness. And then those experiences kept leading me away from the symptoms and back to the narrative, the stories, right? The core stories. And there's something you said, Ingrid, at the beginning that it kind of, when you're introducing yourself, that I think, and what do y'all think about this? When I say this, that there's a way that sexual trauma fragments the human heart like almost nothing else, like the way it touches and shatters into all these different places in a person, in a way that other things don't. Is that accurate? I think it's accurate, but
I would say it depends. It all depends on how. So for example, like if someone experienced sexual trauma later on in life and had a secure attachment within their family, then I don't think it would impact them nearly as much. I think there's a strong connection around neglect and sexual trauma that's where it's just so damaging. Not having
Can you say a little more about that?
Yeah. So if a child experienced sexual trauma, they came home and said, "Mom, this thing happened to me." And mom said, "It wasn't your fault. Tell me everything that happened. I'm here with you. You know, let's make sure you're going to be safe." And then it never happens again. That absolutely can be damaging, but compare it to it always being a secret or that disclosure being rejected and then repetitively being abused, it's just a totally different.
And that, and the loneliness and isolation that goes along with that, I guess that would be true like at any age, not just as a child, but
right, like, but especially like as a 40, child,
but especially as a child. Can we talk a little bit about this continuum of trauma is a word that's thrown around a lot, right? But we talk about sexual trauma and this lack of support. Like I think about it from like violence on one end and pleasure on the other, for lack of a better term, right? Mm-hmm. And that just because there's something that you enjoyed, it doesn't mean it wasn't traumatic. Is that mm-hmm. like the violent stuff's kind of easy to go, right. That's trauma. Right. I think what I've experienced in working with people is my body said yes, my heart said no, and my brain was confused. And in that, I'm fractured. Like just that, like a person's own ambivalence in the hands of a perpetrator can be just totally destructive to an individual. And then you have, so that's one axis. Another axis would be like, how well do I know this person? And there's whole ramifications of, is it a stranger? That's really scary and traumatic. Is it somebody I know? That's really scary and disorienting too, right? Like, so it doesn't fit neatly in defining sexual trauma, like just saying like it's this, because there's this whole weird spectrum. I'm trying to put words to this thing that's like, I think it's hard to put words to, but how, when you're talking with clients, like how does that spectrum show up for you and how clients begin to face this stuff?
I mean, Stephen, I think you're the one, you know, a few years ago, that what you're just explaining, that sexual trauma quadrants, you know, that we've used even for our workshops has been so helpful to give this language and this kind of new introduction to what sexual trauma even is to these clients, because they're so used to being in that, like, what, like 10% of, you know, in back alley or leaving a store and someone holding you gunpoint and, you know, taking advantage of you that way, instead of it being so many other ways that you can be harmed, like, you know, through online, you know, like being online and like feeling like someone's like trying to get something from you, or you need to send a picture or you don't want to, you know, like even those things can be traumatic and feel like someone is trying to take something from me and I am feeling scared and I don't know what to do. Maybe if I just give in, it'll be over. Right. And so there's like sometimes that like thought. And so there's just a lot of it just, I think in some ways what we're trying to do is to make it more, accessible to have these conversations and to share more about what sexual trauma even is. So women don't feel as much shame if they're not alone. And a lot of stories that they carry, like you said earlier, we don't work with repressed memories. I don't think we do, but I also think sometimes they're kind of in black and white and it's like, those are old. And then they start to kind of come in color and it's like, oh my gosh, that happened. And then this happened and this happened and dots are connecting.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's,
what are you thinking, Ingrid?
It is such a wide spectrum, you know, sexual trauma. It can be, you know, no words need to be said. Words can be said, no touch can happen. You know, like it's just, it could be exposure to pornography at a young age. It could be,
I was talking to a woman recently and she was talking about a professional, like, let's say, I mean, it wasn't a doctor, but let's say it was a doctor because it's similar to a doctor. And he made a suggestive comment, right? That totally, like, was really, I mean, he's the way he said it, what he said, when he said it, like, sent this really capable, smart, strong woman spinning, you know, questioning herself. Right. And
questioning authority, right?
Like questioning authority.
Authority figure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that happened like, and she was asking me like, hey, is this off? Like, was this belt off? Was it off? Like she'd come to strong, like a hopefully legitimate authority and said, this belt off, was this off? Like, it's like, oh my gosh. Like I was so, like she was in trauma, you know, trying to put the pieces back together. And like you said, Ingrid, there was no touching. There was nothing obvious, but there was a boundary violation.
Right.
And a use of power and privilege to get some kind of, by the perpetrator, to get some kind of self-gratification or arousal, right, from somebody who didn't want to, it wasn't mutual.
Exactly.
You know? And that's one end of the spectrum, and the other end is somebody like doing something really violent, and it all creates disorganization inside of a person. It all inflects shame. It all creates fear and loneliness and confusion.
I would even say it's, what is really disheartening is, you know, the concept of consent, of course, is talked about a lot more, which is really, really great and important. And perpetrators are using it to their advantage. So it's there where they'll get a verbal, like they'll manipulate a verbal consent without actually like getting a enthusiastic, you know, yes. And so that is so confusing because, well, I said yes, he asked. And so, yeah, it's really insidious and it is crazy making.
So it is, thank you. I think that's a really good definition of trauma. It's crazy making. Like that's one really helpful definition. You know, so we've talked, we defined the problem. I think we've defined it well. Like, what's the help that people get? Like, and how do you begin to define that? And what's some of the framework that you all think through when it comes to helping somebody resolve these narratives and heal and grow through these stories?
I mean, I think one thing that I try to work on with my clients, and I think Ingrid, us together in our workshop and hopefully in the group too, is helping these women have more of their voice. Because even if they do have this, like, feel manipulated and like, okay, I said yes, but I didn't want to, it's like, well, there's still a big story there, right? Like, what were they taught about their yeses and their nos? What were they taught about knowing themselves, you know, and understanding that their voice does have power, you know, and they can walk away and they, you know, and so I think in some ways it's relearning what it means to have themselves again. Mm-hmm. And just like, you know, the person, you know, Stephen, who was able to say to you, hey, like, this felt off, like, that's huge, right? But she didn't just go home and shame herself. She was able to talk about it. And so I think that's kind of some of the healing parts that we're trying to move into.
One thing I love about the workshop that we've done is really just giving language to survivors of, that's okay, I experienced that. I thought it was off. I didn't know what it was. Now I know what it is. And that's just really powerful. Just knowing this, step one, just knowing what is sexual trauma and being able to identify, yeah, I went through that. And then being able to come together with other women and another woman can validate, oh yeah, that same thing happened to me. And that externalizing that empathy and compassion that they have for another woman who went through something similar, I believe helps them start to extend some compassion and empathy towards themselves.
Yeah. And not feel so lonely, like knowing that.
Right.
Yeah. That it's like a vibe. Both those things are happening.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, it's almost like, you know, recognizing and then grieving and then healing, right? It's like mm-hmm. this process to kind of, you have to go through it to get the, you know, the victory of the healing, you know, like to actually, like you said, Stephen, earlier, of like, you tried to run away from some of those things, but all roads kept leading you back there, you know? And it's like, you've got to go through it I tell like clients sometimes, it's almost like crawling through one of those little tunnels at the playground, you know? It's like, you got to go through this to get to the other side. It might be dark inside. You know, my kids get in there. I mean, they like it. They have fun. But at the same time, to get the other side, it's a different scenery. It doesn't look the same. You know, you've got to go through it. Mm.
What more would you want someone to know about female sexual trauma? Like, as a woman, like, what would you want people to know?
This is not encouraging, but it's true. Like, it's not going to go away. And you deserve to be able to heal through it. And you deserve to have full connection with yourself and to have your power back.
Kristen, what about you?
I think I really want women to know that you don't have to lump your body and your sexuality and your heart all in one category. If that is scorned, right, it's bad. I think to be able to like celebrate your body, your sexuality, like that, the womanhood of, you know, who you are, and healing those things that have hurt you, but continuing to rise above that, right? Like, I think that there needs to be like this continual, like, just because that part of me was hurt doesn't mean I have to, like, you know, completely cover up every part of me or have to completely shun away from like any co-events, you know, with men and women. I don't know. I just think there needs to be like this healthy version of not shamelessness, but, you know, healthy version of being a woman and being able to have experiences, but at the same time grow from them.
Mm-hmm. Thank y'all. That was really good. Like, especially what y'all just said at the end, like, it was very inspiring to me and very compassionate. I really do, as I said at the beginning, I really do respect and admire the work y'all are doing here at Sage Hill. And I'm grateful that we have that, but I also appreciate you sharing for other people to kind of hear about hope, to hear, because I think if a person's not dealt with that, and that, like, if they've experienced some level of trauma and disorientation and shame and loneliness and fear through the category of sexual trauma, you can feel like, kind of like you all are alluding to, like you're the only person and I'm uniquely messed up, mm-hmm. you know? And I think just this conversation to hear that, like, sadly, you're not uniquely messed up. That's mm-hmm. awful. And the good news is you're not uniquely messed up. Like
you're not alone.
You're not alone. Yeah. You're not alone. And there's help and there's hope and there's healing and the pragmatic. I think what you said actually is encouraging, Ingrid, that it doesn't, like, we're not erasing the past, but we're transforming the past. Like, it doesn't have to be a mark of contempt and a mark of loneliness. It actually can be a mark of power and growth and, you know, reconciliation and restoration and, like, all those things. That's encouraging. It's not the final. But sexual trauma and the ramifications of it don't have to be the final story in a person's life.
Yeah.
That's good. Well, thank y'all. It's really good.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. I know that's some heavy information, but I also hope you found encouragement and hope in what we were talking about, that if that's part of your story, if sexual trauma is part of your story, it's not something you have to live with alone, and it doesn't have to continue to be the centerpiece of like your internal world, that it can be displaced with hope and joy and healing and reconciliation and empowerment and encouragement. And if there's a way that we can help, just reach out. We're here to help.
This podcast is brought to you by Sage Hill, a social impact organization. Our mission is to help people be who they're made to be so that they can do what they're made to do. Find more resources to live fully, love deeply, and lead well at sagehillresources.com.